Morning News is brought to you by Sprague Sports on 32nd Street, Yuma's hunting and shooting headquarters and responsible gun ownership since 1956.
Ed Whitehead's Tire Pros have been serving Arizona for over 20 years. And we're here to remind you that, yeah, we got tires for that. We also do alignments, brakes, oil changes, AC work, inspections, preventive maintenance, and more. Get your tires at any of our four Ed Whitehead's Tire Pros locations. Or use the Tire Finder online at edwhiteheadstirepros.com to choose the perfect tire or make your appointment. Free pickup and drop-off for a hassle-free experience guaranteed. Ed Whitehead's Tire Pros. Yeah, we got tires for that.
The following program on 560 KBLU is a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters, LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters, nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson, hosted by attorneys Sean Garner and Adam Hanson.
Good morning, Yuma. I hope you had a great weekend. It was wonderful weather. Hope you got out to enjoy that, and hopefully without a face mask and breathe in that nice, clean air. Right, Russ?
That's exactly right.
I'm attorney Adam Hanson. This is Life, Death, and the Law. Thank you for joining us again for another episode. Like I said before, over the weekend it was great weather, so hopefully you got to enjoy some of that. And it looks like things are warming up as time progresses, as we go more and more into latter April, now starting May. And hopefully you can get down to the water, down to the river, as it starts to warm up. There's a lot going on, and I'm sure you're aware of most of it as you listen to the news or you watch the news sources that come about. Particularly what I'm worried about, and I've talked about this before on the show, is the confiscation of our firearms through not necessarily legislation means, but by executive order. And Russ, I've talked about this earlier. Previously, a few weeks ago, I talked about this concept, and I talked about how a lot of people have a bad phobia, maybe from heights or from spiders. Mine is more along the lines of a no-knock warrant, and I've talked about that mm-hmm. before.
Right.
And things aren't really mentioned in the media. We had a lot of media that told us about the narrative when it came to Officer Chauvin and the George Floyd case. That just came out last week, where the jury found him guilty on all counts of murder, which I thought was really interesting. Usually in those particular situations, you'll have some sort of a split among the jury members, but this was unanimous. As I saw that verdict, I was really conflicted. I personally feel like, you know, we don't want law enforcement going around killing people, obviously.
No.
But at the same time, if you watch the video, and they played the video for the jurors, but if you watch the video and you look at the minutes leading up to the officer's leaning or his knee on the back of George Floyd's neck, it ended up on his neck. It started off on his shoulder blades, they ended up creeping up onto his neck, and there he sat for a little while. But as you watch that video leading up to that incident, to me, and I'm not a police officer, but knowing what these guys go through on a day-to-day basis, and the things that they encounter, it looked to me to be like a reasonable hold given the circumstances. And had it not been a reasonable hold, I would have hoped that the officers that were surrounding him, I think there were three or four officers that are also charged as accomplices here, that they would have stepped in and said, hey, buddy, you know, that's a little bit excessive, and that's going to lead to
it's a bad optic. I mean, the guy's screaming, I can't breathe, and it's 9.5 minutes. Of that, even though he's handcuffed. So, I mean, I understand, you know, you're going to have a juror that's going to decide, not a medical professional, a juror. And the optics bad. So, and I wouldn't want a knee on my neck or for 9.5 minutes.
Right. And the hope is that you never end up in that situation, Russ. And most of us that are, and those that are listening, most of us won't end up in that situation. Our right. goal is to obey laws and not pay with fraudulent money or counterfeit money at a supermarket.
Correct.
And our goal is probably not to ingest illegal substances like fentanyl. Or
well, he was resisting arrest, wouldn't get in the back seat, a whole bunch of stuff going on. It's not a death penalty, and I don't think the death was intentional. But and I don't know if it was even created by that, if it was created by other things. But still a bad optic.
And how does this play out throughout the rest of the nation? Do we have now police officers, like I read a story coming out of Portland, Oregon, where the recruits for the police department in Portland are drastically down?
Of course.
And obviously so. When you've got the derision of the law enforcement agencies. What's really interesting to me is going back to the gun issue, where they have promulgated a proposed statute out of the House where it passed with flying colors, the confiscation of AR-15-type weapons, and there's a whole list. If you read this list, it's basically every firearm that you can possibly own right now is going to be on a list where you can't buy it or it's going to be very, very difficult to buy. And as you read through this legislation, you go through the whole list, and at the very end it's like, oh, wait, here is an exception to the rule. It's for our law enforcement officers, federal law enforcement officers. And I say up to myself,
federal.
I'm reading this legislation, wow. I'm thinking, okay, you're taking all these things away from me. And then there's an exception to the rule for federal law enforcement agents. And I say to myself, wait a second. If you're going to take my stuff away, then you're going to take their stuff away. You don't take it from me if you don't take it from them. Why are they allowed to have it? I thought the police were bad. You're telling me the police are bad and that they have an implicit bias towards others. And therefore, they don't deserve to have a firearm. If you're telling me I can't have a firearm, then definitely they can't. They're murderers. That's what you're telling me.
We live in
confusing
right? times, buddy. Confusing times. Yes.
So I the only thing I can hope for is that our governor here on the state level says, you know what, we're not going to enforce some sort of a federal mandate that comes from an executive order that isn't through a legislative means. And even if it did. And Governor Ducey did do that about 2 weeks ago, two right. Mondays ago, right. 2 weeks from today, backwards. And he said, basically, he signed an order saying we're not going to comply with any federal firearm mandates that are not under the Second Amendment terms. Now, it's a little broad, but basically what he's saying is we're not going to lend our local law enforcement agents to enforce laws that are unconstitutional in Arizona's eyes when it comes to the Second Amendment. And I think that's a good first step. And I think a lot of states are actually taking that route. They're saying, we're going to separate ourselves, and you can't come into our forum and dictate to us that a shotgun is illegal or that an AR-15 is illegal. We will be the ones that determine that. And we can do it through our own state legislatures. And in this case, Governor Ducey signed an order that came through the House and the Senate in Arizona, and he approved it, that saying that we're not going to comply with these executive orders that might, on their face, look to be unconstitutional when it comes to the Second Amendment.
And he didn't really do executive orders. He did like executive actions or something, which I guess is more like a suggestion than it is a directive, but. I don't really.
Yeah, and he's leading up to it. So he
right.
said, this is what's going to come up. Basically, what he said was, ATF, I want you to look into this. This is what we want you to do. And then they came out with, a few days later, they came out from him giving that announcement. They came out with promulgated rules that they want the ATF to adopt. And the ATF is kind of lockstep. They're going to get in line with that. And they probably will enforce and implement those particular laws.
As a policy or something. But he's asked Congress to do it, and that's where it has to come from. But we'll see on that.
Yep.
Well, we'll see.
It doesn't have to come through Congress necessarily. We've seen in the past a lot of stuff done through executive order.
Yeah.
So he's already expressed the idea that, or at least his handlers have, that are, you know, pulling the strings. They've expressed that if it doesn't happen through the House and the Senate, then most likely there will be an executive order to that effect. The Biden administration is trying to tiptoe around. They know that when they talk about guns and taking them from people, that it's a very sensitive subject in the United States of America, and that you have a collective group, 51% of those that voted for President Trump, that will probably be up in arms, no pun intended, when this actually happens.
Oh, tremendous amount of people. Like, there's going to be Democrats, Republicans, or, you know, that both that would be up in arms. But you got to take a break, my friend.
This is Life, Death, and the Law, 560 AM KBLU. We'll be right back after this.
More thought-provoking conversation coming up next on Life, Death, and the Law, right here after this.
Hey, Yuma, Dave Ramsey here. If you listen to our show or know anything about us, then you know I only recommend products and services I trust and I believe in. That's why when it comes to protecting your assets and planning for your loved one's future, you've got to call my friends Sean Garner and Adam Hansen at the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen. I encourage you to take the first step and attend a free, no-pressure seminar and learn all of your options. The firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen has been educating the Yuma community for over 40 years, and this is the only area of law that they practice. Sean and Adam believe in giving free education to help people make smart decisions about their assets and help them leave a legacy for their family that they can be proud of. Schedule a free personal consultation today. Call 783-4575 or visit yumaestateplanning.com.
Weather is brought to you by Ed Whitehead's Tire Pros, serving Arizona for over 20 years.
With the rainy season winding down, we don't expect a lot of rain, but a few showers are possible as this cold front swings through today. 70 the high. Showers this evening, then tomorrow the sun's out. It's still cool, 75 tomorrow. When you're looking to hire people fast, better late than never doesn't cut it. Fortunately, Indeed has Instant Match. Sponsor a job and you'll instantly receive a list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description. More at Indeed.com/credit. I'm meteorologist Terry Smith from the Weather Channel.
Arizona, as Keith Urban would say, blue ain't your color. It's time that we make Arizona red again. Hi, this is Dr. Bob Branch with the Power of Fives. We're looking for great conservatives to run for all statewide and legislative district offices. Have you ever thought about running for political office? If so, we would love to talk to you. Contact us at thepowerofives.com. That's thepowerofives.com.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back, Yuma, to Life, Death, and the Law. I'm attorney Adam Hanson, and I've got the one and only Mr. Russ Clark pushing buttons and dials and making it look like Willy Wonka's factory in here. And prior to the break, we were talking about the confiscation of firearms in the United States, and that sounds like a wild concept when you say it out loud to yourself, but that's actually on the docket here, and we've been talking about how the Biden administration has been, I don't know if threatening is the word to use, but they have been bringing it up in the weeks leading up to today, and they have promulgated out of the Biden administration a set of laws that they want the ATF, which is the law enforcement agency that comes in when you violate the GCA, the Gun Control Act, or other legislation that we have on the books as of now. And they come in and they'll confiscate guns. They'll use local law enforcement agents to help them do that, usually the sheriff's department or the local police department, to come into your house. And if they've got probable cause and they're issued a warrant to come in and take take firearms because they have some sort of reason to believe that you're going to hurt somebody with that particular firearm, or maybe you committed a crime with a firearm, and so they need to go in there to do forensics. So we're talking about an expansion of that particular idea. It's not so much that law-abiding citizens are going out and committing crimes or anything with their firearms. Right. That's not what we're talking about.
They don't believe those guns should be out in the public's use is a problem.
That's right.
And that's what Biden regardless has said. He's been public about it.
State or, yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah, and they what's interesting is the government is not shy about it anymore. It used to be kind of an unspoken thing and increments, baby steps leading up to where we are now. But nowadays, the government just says, hey, we're coming. We're coming after. If you have an AR-15, we think that's a weapon of mass destruction.
Right.
And if I'm a neighbor to a person that has an AR-15 and I say, listen, hey, Sheriff, I know the guy next to me. I saw him loading up his AR-15s, going out to the desert, you know, and they do that all the time. He's got one. And that's what we call a red flag law, where you can tattletale on your neighbor.
Now, we don't have a red flag law here in Arizona.
No, we don't.
Okay.
But that's what they're
federal government is
saying. That's what we need to put in place. In order to keep us all safe, this is a public welfare type issue. And we've already seen that case go through the Supreme Court just weeks ago. And Russ, you and I talked about this a few weeks ago, where we saw a case go through the Supreme Court where they were trying to extend the public welfare type doctrine when it comes to the police force being able to search a vehicle. And the idea that there is that, oh, well, they have probable cause. If they have probable cause, then they can extend that to a certain extent when searching a vehicle if it's for the public welfare of
well, they're talking about extending the vehicle search to a home, a domicile, which is, you know, never allowed without a warrant. But they're talking about a warrantless search, which is kind of an insane.
Oral arguments on that particular case at the Supreme Court were held about 3 weeks ago, and we still haven't had the final verdict from the Supreme Court on how they're going to fall on that or the order there, the doctrine that they're going to outlay. But the government's argument in that particular case was that there was a man who had a dispute with his wife, and the wife left that night. They were yelling at each other. During the argument, the man took out a pistol. He went into his room, got out a pistol, put it on, slammed it on the countertop, and he said, let's just end this right here. Just put me out of my misery. Have you ever heard of that happening before? I don't know if you have in your particular case. But things get heated in marriages. That's just the reality.
I think it's a bad move, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but when you're mad, I mean, that most of our prisons are filled with people that did something out of anger. And therefore, anger plays a huge part in a lot of these domestic violence type issues. In this particular case, it didn't go anywhere. He slammed it on the countertop. He was making a statement to his wife. His wife leaves ultimately and goes stays in a hotel that night. The next morning, she calls the house, no answer. She calls her husband, no answer, no answer. She keeps calling. Ultimately, he didn't answer. Maybe he was still cooling off. I don't know. But so she became worried, and she called the police. She asked them to go do a welfare check. A welfare check is very typical, especially when you have an older...
Yeah, but that's a knock on the door.
Something like that, where... Yeah. Yeah, you don't live in that community, for example, and you want the police. You haven't heard from your parent for a while, so you call the police, ask them to go do what we call a welfare check, and they can go knock on the door. Sometimes they'll go in, dependent on, you know, what they can see through a window or something like that. Maybe they see that person on the ground, and so that gives them probable cause or what we call exigent circumstances, such that they can skirt the warrant and come into the house and take care of that emergent person. Well, in this particular case that the Supreme Court heard 3 weeks ago, when the wife was calling, she didn't get an answer or response. Then she called the police to do a welfare check. She was worried about her husband is what she was saying, because there was a gun involved the night before. Not that it was used, but he being, you know, flamboyant at the time, he used that threat. I'm going to end this right now. Or he wanted her to take the pistol and just put him out of his misery, which I could see totally, you know. In a normal situation, a normal argument, I can see it rising to that level. I can see a guy going and saying that, not really meaning it. Whether he meant it or not, nothing actually happened. And so the next morning, as the police came in, being aware that there was a firearm involved the night before in some form or fashion, or she told them the story, well, they went straight through the house, and they went and found him on the back porch, and he was just there. I think he was smoking a cigarette and drinking his coffee just on the back porch there, something like that. And they ended up not so much detaining him in the sense that he created a crime or he committed a crime, but rather they took him for his own good to be mentally tested to make sure that he was
For your good.
And he passed,
and they still took his guns and wouldn't give them back.
Yeah, so while he was away, while they took him out of the house and took him to mental testing, make sure he's not crazy, they went through his house, found the gun and guns, and they took those. They took and confiscated those guns. Now, this happened years ago. I believe the actual encounter happened like in 2017, 2018, something like that. And it's just now getting to the Supreme Court. And to till that day, they still hadn't given the guns back. And so his argument was, I want my guns back. I haven't done anything. I haven't committed a crime.
He's mentally competent.
You found me to be mentally sound. Why do you have my guns? Why did you even take them in the first place? And so that's what the Supreme Court had to decide. They have to decide whether the police, the government, has the ability without a warrant to come into your house and confiscate guns.
Now, they've already
They've
already heard those arguments. We're just waiting on a verdict.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So they've already heard the arguments. And the government's argument was, well, just like in a car, where we've extended that public welfare doctrine, where if it's for the public good, that the officer can do this, that, or the other in order to maintain peace in the community. And so that's the argument of the government. Surely we need a government agent to have the authority with or without a warrant to come into houses in the event that it's alleged that a person might have a firearm and might hurt themselves or others. We definitely need to go in, and we definitely need to, for the community good, the community welfare, we need to protect the community by taking away that person's firearms. Now, this is very tricky, very, very tricky, especially in those states that still haven't opened up completely, like Arizona has, where mask mandates are still enforced, or they're a little bit more stringent on those types of things, or even COVID in general. So where does a rule stop? If you're going to come in and take away my guns because of a person alleged that I'm going to use my gun to hurt myself or others, and so even though it hasn't happened yet, or there's no plans drawn up, there's no conspiracy in the works, if you're going to allege that, well, why can't I allege that my neighbor's not wearing a mask when they invited people over for dinner, and they're supposed to be wearing a mask, that for the community good, you need to wear a mask. Otherwise, I want you hauled off to jail. And this all goes back to, what is your particular idea of what our government is supposed to do for you? What are we supposed to allow, and what are we not supposed to allow? Well, really, that's a personal question, and it's a personal answer. And everybody, I believe, in the United States has a responsibility to determine that answer. And as we've gone through this last election cycle, and I've seen some particular things that were not so much on the government side, but rather on the private side. When we talk about Facebook censoring, or you've got Twitter censoring happening, these are private entities acting. However, we had no government checks on that particular stifling of voices that you might agree with or you might not agree with. I don't care who is speaking. I want to believe that as grown adults, and as individuals that have the ability to think for ourselves, that we can hear all arguments of a particular issue, and I can determine what is right and what's wrong, and how that aligns with my moral compass, and whether or not I want to use the government as my agent to deprive the life, liberty, or freedom of my neighbor. And that's really what it comes down to. The government is our agent, really. In the grand scheme of things, if you think of it like that, then you're saying, well,
I don't have the time or resources to go out and police my neighborhood. I don't have those. I don't have the time. I've got to work for a living to provide for my particular family. So in my stead, I'm going to authorize my government in a limited way to go out and enforce laws that I believe are necessary, because if you don't obey by these particular laws that I agree with, then I'm authorizing that particular government agent to deprive my neighbor that violates that law of his or her life, death, or life, I was about to life, say life, death, and law, life, or their freedom, or their pursuit of happiness in some form or fashion. Ultimately, that's what we're saying. When we approve or we don't approve a particular action or law by the government, in the reality of things, in the beginning, let's say, back in the beginning, when we formed our nation and we put together the Constitution was very limited. And I've said this before, that nowhere in the world since then, and even at the time, had there been a Constitution written that was so short. It's never been duplicated. That particular Constitution was designed to protect rights that our forefathers believed were divine, that they were rights not so much because the government granted them to us, but rather our God granted them to us. And by virtue of being born in this land, we have particular human rights that the violation of which would be going against deity. And that's what our founders wanted to codify when they drafted the Constitution. And so that's what you really have to decide.
Hey, you have to take a break,
my
friend.
Is our government one that gives rights or takes away rights? We've got to go to a break. This is Life, Death, and the Law, 560 AM KBLU. We'll be right back after this.
Have a question? Our phone lines are open. Call 344-5258. That's 344-KBLU.
Hey, Yuma, Dave Ramsey here. If you listen to our show or know anything about us, then you know I only recommend products and services I trust and I believe in. That's why when it comes to protecting your assets and planning for your loved one's future, you've got to call my friends Sean Garner and Adam Hansen at the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen. I encourage you to take the first step and attend a free, no-pressure seminar and learn all of your options. The firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen has been educating the Yuma community for over 40 years, and this is the only area of law that they practice. Sean and Adam believe in giving free education to help people make smart decisions about their assets and help them leave a legacy for their family that they can be proud of. Schedule a free personal consultation today. Call 783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
Are you struggling to find quality employees? Tired of placing the same old Sunday classifieds or getting lost in the online job boards and getting the same results? Then you need to call us today at 344-4980 and put radio to work for you. It's fast. Place an ad today and have it on air tomorrow. Whether you're looking for hourly workers or to fill highly specified job descriptions, placing an ad on radio will help you fill these positions quickly. Call 344-4980 today and put radio recruitment to work for you.
Hope lives here in California, but during these challenging times, we could all use a little extra support. Visit calhope.org for free COVID-19 emotional support resources or call our warm line at 1-833-317-4673.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hansen, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back, Yuma. This is Life, Death, and the Law, 560 AM KBLU. I'm attorney Adam Hansen, and I've got the one and only Mr. Russ Clark on the board.
Good morning.
Running things and trying to make us sound as good as we can. He's got a really hard job in front of him, but he's trying his best. Before we get too far back into the subject matter that we're talking about, I just want to make mention of today's radio sponsor, Deason, Garner, and Hansen, the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen. We have been around for over 45 years, and our goal is to help the Yuma community and the surrounding Yuma community put in place planning that will allow them to not have to worry if something were to happen to them, let's say they become incapacitated or they pass away, that's not a fun thought to think about, but our goal is to help families avoid court processes and onerous government processes such that it becomes time-consuming, expensive, and nobody wants to go through that. Nobody wants to leave their loved ones through that type of a process. And so our particular goal is to help families avoid that in some form or fashion. Oftentimes it comes by means of using a living trust or some other type of entity where you can control things as a manager, as a trustee, or you can assign that to somebody else if you were to become incapacitated or pass away. And that allows, in general, that allows for the ability to open up a lot of different options for families. And so that's our goal. If you have something in place already, then I would highly recommend you calling my office in order to sit down and let's review it. Maybe it's been a little bit of time. Maybe things have happened and your particular circumstances have changed. Let's sit down and review it. We do that all the time. And we know exactly what we're looking at when we look at it. And we can give you some ideas of maybe how the laws have changed in your particular circumstance that might be advantageous to implement into your planning now. If you don't have anything in place, then my counsel to you would be get started now. It's never too late to start. And one of the best ways to do that is going to my website, yuma.law. That's it, yuma.law, very simple. And on my website, on the homepage, if you scroll down just a little bit, you'll see this little advertisement for our online seminar. Sean and I, my partner Sean and I, we put together this online seminar, this video, in response to the COVID situation. We used to give in-person seminars at the local libraries twice a month leading up to COVID. But once COVID happened and the library shut down, yes, we could still hold those things in our own office, but we found it would be easier and faster to make this information available to the masses through the Internet. And so we put this presentation online for the community to be able to browse to and see what their options are. That's one of the best places to go, is to go to our website, watch that little video, and take note of those things that might be applicable in your particular life, and then let's sit down together and talk about it, and we can help you through that process. Over the break, Russ was asking me a question. He said that Russ, you were texted a question. Is that what it was?
I was, by a listener. Uh-huh. Do you want me to read it to you?
By a listener, right? Sure.
Okay, it says, my personal trust that control my holdings directly after death state that my body is to go directly to a medical research lab so that no funeral can take place. But I am now told that my wife could object to the trust language.
Yeah, I get this question quite often. And okay. My response would be two things. Number one, your trust doesn't control what happens to your body after a person passes away. And maybe that's just being too technical on this question, but the way that you actually do that is through your healthcare power of attorney and or your last will and testament. That's where you insert that language where you want your body to be cremated or you want it to be, you want it to go to science. For example, like this listener is asking. And so first and foremost, you're going to have that language in your last will and testament. It's called anatomical gifting language, where you're saying, I want my body to go and be used for any purpose, you know, or not at all, or I want it to be used for research only, or I want it to be used for transplantation only. And if there's no means to transplant something of mine when I pass away, then it's like it didn't happen. Right. So that language is going to be drafted in your last will and testament and or your healthcare power of attorney. Now, if you're comatose or you're in a vegetative state, then your healthcare agent on your healthcare power of attorney is going to promulgate that language, or they're going to push that onto the physicians that are taking care of your body. And if the body, if you're in a condition such that the doctors say, really, if the machine's keeping this person alive, there's nothing else that we can do in that particular situation. How do you want to progress from here? That's what we call your advanced directive, and it works hand in hand with your anatomical gifting statement, because your healthcare agent is the voice for you in that particular situation. If that's your wife and your wife says, you know what, I'm not going to tell him about this, that, or the other that I know that my husband has, I don't want that to happen, so I'm going to tell them this, that, or the other,
right.
The way I want it to go, then that's a challenge. So if you don't trust the person that you've named as your healthcare agent to actually follow through with the directive that you have, that's the challenge. You've got to be able to trust that person. That person has to understand that they have a fiduciary duty to communicate what you've put together in your actual legal document.
If the wife has a different idea, maybe for whatever reason, and she doesn't think that's right, can you put somebody else on that to take care of it? Or does it have to be?
And that was the second point. That's the second point I would bring up.
Okay.
If you have that doubt, and I tell people this all the time, what we'll do when we sit down and we're reviewing what this person wants in my office, I'll ask them, who do you have as who would you want to make financial type decisions for you? This person, that person, whatever. And then when you get to the health side of it, it's a different world. Would you still want that financial person that you just told me about or people that you told me about to make healthcare decisions, or do you have somebody else that you would trust? Oftentimes I'll have somebody tell me, well, no, I don't want them to make my healthcare decisions because I know they won't want to do what I want them to do.
Wow.
And as I press them on that, they'll say, yeah, they just can't do it. It's too harsh for them or something like that. You know, they'll give me some reason. Okay, if that's the case, then let's think of somebody else that you have confidence will follow through with what you want. Even if the spouse has communicated to this listener that, I'm not going to tell them that. I'm not going to tell the doctors what you really want. I'm going to do what I want. Then maybe you want to name a co-agent with that spouse. That way you're not bypassing the spouse. You're not making them upset saying, hey, because you're not going to do what I want you to do, I'm going to skip you. You're saying, no, I'll name you, but I want you to work together with this person who I know will actually bring this to light to the doctors so that the doctors can follow through with what my directive actually says. So you have a teammate there with that particular person, and you can make them work together or independently. In that particular case, I'd advocate for together. You want them to make that decision together, or it needs to be unanimous.
Now,
the unanimous decisions would be hanging on what you wrote in your health care power of attorney, your last will and testament.
This listener says that's what's in his will now, but he's being told that his wife could still object. And I guess I have a question. If somebody gets hit by a bus, they generally got to call the wife. And the wife may not even tell the other person that there's been an incident.
And that's what it comes down to. It's your agent choice. It's your agent choice because wife or whoever your agent is might not disclose the information.
But if I pick an agent to take care of my health concerns, then that's not going to be that's locked in. There's nobody else that can step in, including a spouse.
That's right. Yeah, the spouse could come in and say, "Well, I need to be the one making that decision." But this only it work in practice, in reality, in real life, this only would work if you've already provided the hospital or your primary care physician with your actual document.
Right.
That way they'll know, oh, wife isn't here, it's this person.
So everyone that possibly could be informed that this person got hit by a bus has got to be aware that exists and that it's not the wife then.
Exactly right. And the way that you do that is you would take those documents to YRMC now, and you put them on file now. And that way YRMC is in the know as to who they need to contact if something were to happen to you.
Okay.
Or you would take them to your primary care physician's office, and you would put them on file there with them so that they know that when you have an emergent situation and they need to get a hold of your agent, they've got the document on file already. And the document doesn't say wife or a person you distrust in that particular situation. It would have listed the contact information of your actual agent that you chose that you know will follow through with the directive.
Well, let's say that the wife is so adamant that she doesn't think this is the right way to handle him, because she's sensitive to it, and she wants to override it. Can she go to a judge and say, I object, and I want this overridden?
She can, and anybody can make an objection.
Okay,
is, will it be successful? Probably not. If it's in writing, like this listener is stating, I've already got that put together, it's already in my legal documents, then the judge in my experience, is going to go along with what you put in your actual documents. Why? Because that's the starting point. The law says that's where we start. We give deference to the person that went out of their way to create legal documents ahead of time and put into those documents their legal intention. And the idea is that they had capacity at the time and they weren't unduly influenced. That's where we start. Now you have to chisel away at that. So wife, in this case, would have to chisel away at that, saying, well, he didn't have capacity when he created that particular legal document, or somebody was twisting his arm to do that. He really didn't know, or she didn't know what they were doing, kind of thing. The starting point is that they are valid and that the breaching of that would be contrary to the person's intent.
Now, since this is not in the trust, this is actually going to be something in the will, correct?
It'll be, yep, in the last will and testament.
Now,
and in the healthcare
but that has arbitrary. That has to go through probate or something, doesn't it? And that takes months.
It would go through probate if the person ends up dying, yes. Last will and testament.
How can they exercise the last will and testament? Like a funeral happens right away, or going to medical research lab goes right away. How do they make sure that's expedited if it's in a last will and testament versus a trust? Now, I know a trust, it lives on and just keeps moving, but this last will and testament thing could take 8 months or a year to go through the courts. You put the body in storage till then?
The last will and testament, it depends on if the person ends up dying, then you would probate that will if you needed to. But in this case, it's not so much that it's going to be probated, because the person, from the scenario that we're talking about, the person's still alive. They're just on life support. And so Arizona law...
But let's say it's hit by a bus, and this person said, I want my body to go to medical laboratory, not to a funeral home.
So the person is, they have passed away. Okay, yeah. And so two things there. Number one, you pick the right agent. Number two, you can set these things up ahead of time with an institution. Like one comes to mind up in Phoenix. It's called Science Care. It's where you can make a donation ahead of time. They'll vet you and ask you health type questions, and then you contract with them in order to get your body. Basically, what they do is when you pass away at YRMC, alerts them, and they come get the body, and then they do what they do with it, research, science, transplantation. The remains are then cremated and given to the people or the person that you've listed ahead of time on that paperwork.
So that would that'd be a contract that you do while you're still alive then, and say, look, this is what I want done. Okay.
Yep, and so there's a company, there are many companies like that. There's a company that a lot of people that are listening probably have heard of called Neptune Society. They're a very similar company. In that particular case, you pay them so much, and then they'll contract with you to do all this. And basically, a lot of people that I meet with that are going that route, they prefer that, because then the family doesn't have to deal with any funeral issues, dealing with the body, any of that. This company will come in, get the body right away, and then the next step is, after everything's, the body is used for whatever they're going to use it for, then the remains are cremated and delivered to those people that you already set up ahead of time.
Now, you've told me before that, like on a trust, it makes a difference state by state, handle them differently, and Arizona is the strongest, in your opinion, on helping people, for all issues. And you can do it in Arizona even if you don't live here. But this isn't a trust issue. This is a will issue, right? And is the will different state by state, or is that the same?
They tend to be very similar, but they are different from state to state. And what we're talking about tends to be a little bit more different. We're talking about these anatomical gifting laws, and every state is a little bit different on that. If you created this in a different state, then you would need to review that language and see how it coincides with our statute here in Arizona. Not that it's not going to work.
Right.
You just want to make sure it has the magic words that most states have, but you just want to make sure that it's understood that it meets the statute as it's actually in progress right now in Arizona. And one of the best ways to do that is just to sit down with us, and we can look through it with you and point out whether or not it's going to meet muster when it actually comes down to it. But getting back to that one idea that you can pre-contract with companies where you can kind of avoid all that issue. You don't need to worry about the wife doing this, that, or the other, because you've already pre-contracted with the private company that's going to come in and get the body when you pass away. And that's against all objections, should we say.
But they would have to
have that matching.
They'd have to know that he got hit by a bus. Somebody's going to have to notify that company to exercise the contract.
Yes, and that comes through the hospital. So the body's got to go to the hospital for the coroner to declare, for the medical examiner to declare why the death happened in all cases, mm-hmm. in order to prescribe the death certificate. And so it's got to go through the hospital in some form or fashion so that the medical examiner can determine the reason for death, and then that issues the death certificate. So ultimately, the hospital is the key to all of this. And that's why I mentioned before, you want to have your documents already on file at the hospital so that they know that when you come in, whether it's through a car accident or because of a heart attack, they've already got your healthcare power of attorney on file. They've got your last will and testament on file. Any document, legal document that you put in place naming who's in charge and when and how and what your intentions are, you want that on file with your primary care physician and with the hospital there locally. And then you also want to be able to make those contracts with those private entities if you want them to get involved after you pass away. You would also provide the contract that you've signed with that particular company to the hospital. So they already know. When you pass away, they know what to do. They give a call to that particular company, whether it's Science Care, Neptune Society, or any other company like this, yeah. And then they'll be able to move on to the next step, with or without the spouse saying yes or no. Because you've already done that. You said yes prior to this all happening, and it's already done. It's in motion.
And if your wife wholeheartedly objects and shows up at the hospital, demands you get a traditional Jamaican wedding, or I mean funeral or something, I guess it's a bad scene. But you think that the paperwork and everything would prevail, and she would not be allowed to claim the body.
Yeah, ultimately, the thing that would prevail the greatest is your contract with that private company, because they're going to go so fast. It's going to happen so fast that the objection from a spouse is not going to override that. It's going to be so fast that they make that decision, or they get a hold of the company, and the company gets the body, and they're gone. I mean, it's a done deal. So that's the best way to handle that, in addition to those other legal means.
Yeah.
But to have that already on file with the hospital would be the best.
What about hiring another private firm to restrain your wife during the procedure?
Hey, I'm not going to get into those issues.
All right, buddy. Well, you need to take a break. We're way late. All right.
Yep. This is Life, Death, and the Law, 560 AM KBLU. We'll be right back.
Have a question? Our phone lines are open. Call 344-5258. That's 344-KBLU.
Hey, Yuma, Dave Ramsey here. If you listen to our show or know anything about us, then you know I only recommend products and services I trust and I believe in. That's why when it comes to protecting your assets and planning for your loved one's future, you've got to call my friends Sean Garner and Adam Hansen at the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen. I encourage you to take the first step and attend a free, no-pressure seminar and learn all of your options. The firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen has been educating the Yuma community for over 40 years, and this is the only area of law that they practice. Sean and Adam believe in giving free education to help people make smart decisions about their assets and help them leave a legacy for their family that they can be proud of. Schedule a free personal consultation today. Call 783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
I've seen so many painters taken advantage of by contractors.
Juan Padilla, International Union of Painters and Allied Trades.
One contractor was stealing wages from painters and used it to build himself a luxury home. By standing together in a union, the painters documented the fraud and won 3 years of back pay.
That's why we need the PRO Act. It will make it easier for anyone in Arizona to join or form a union. And union members, on average, make 11% more than non-union workers, have better pensions, and access to affordable, quality health care.
Unions are crucial. It's about being respected and earning a decent wage. without being taken advantage of.
So call 1-866-832-1560 and tell your senators it's time to pass the PRO Act. Because getting a fair return on your hard work shouldn't be this hard. Paid for by the AFL-CIO.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back, Yuma, the Life, Death, and the Law. I'm Attorney Adam Hanson, and I've got the one and only, the infamous Mr. Russ Clark on the boards.
Good morning.
Running things, pushing buttons, and things like that. This whole show, we've been talking about government intervention in our lives, and we've seen that more so than I would argue ever. In this last year and a half, you know, when we lived through this pandemic and we saw mandatory lockdowns. If you're anything like me, I've never seen that in my lifetime.
What, mandatory?
The government can say you can or cannot leave your house. What's that, Russ?
Well, we live in Arizona. Yeah. We're fortunate. And we have a county here. Nobody was arrested for leaving their houses. Nobody was fined in this state or this county or city for not wearing a mask and stuff. So we're not like California.
Yeah, and that's a good point to bring up. And so we have a laboratory of what works and what doesn't work through this pandemic. We saw states like California, those East Coast states like New York, really lock down and really buckle down. And the citizenry there had a particular response one way or another. Is either they were in line with that, you know, they said, oh yeah, sure, for the public welfare of my neighbor, I'm going to stay in my house, or I'm going to wear a face mask, this, that, and the other. I'm going to stop working. I'm not going to go to work because I can't do that, or I'm going to try and work from home as much as I can. And so you have that argument, and then you have the other side of things where you're saying, well, I get the public welfare issue. I get that argument. I really do. But when the government comes in and says, I can't leave my house, or I have to shut my business down for the good of somebody else, that's where I draw the line. So you've got these competing arguments. And really, I think leading up to the end of this particular show, I think you just need to ask yourself, at this particular time, where do you stand on that spectrum? Are you willing to put your neighbor, let's say, in jail? Or deprive that neighbor of yours of his or her right to a living, to earn a living, or their freedom, you know, if they violate a mask mandate, for example, or a stay-at-home order. Because that's what you're really saying. When we authorize the government as our agent, remember, it's supposed to be for the people, by the people. And if we authorize the government as our agent to put our neighbors in jail or deprive them of their right to freedom or pursuit of happiness and making their own living, then that's ultimately what we're saying when we say, yeah, I'm okay with the mask mandate or with shutting the dentist down, but the lawyers are okay because they make the laws, and so they can stay open. They're essential. They're essential. But the doctor isn't. And the dentist isn't, and the bars are essential, but the gyms are not. When we allow our government to do that to us, then we've become the slave to the master, as opposed to the other way around, which is how our forefathers intended it, that the government was to be managed by us,
versus one person gets martial law and makes all the decisions. That's crazy.
And so where do you stand? That's what I asked you at the end of this particular episode. And I had hoped that you do some research, find out where you stand, look to the past, and we can look to how those founders put together not only our Constitution, but the building blocks of our nation. And I would argue that we are far from that, as we saw through the pandemic today, that we are far from those principles. But can we get back? Absolutely we can.
Yeah.
And I would encourage you to find out a little bit of history so that you know that when it comes to the ballot box,
you got 30 seconds
cycle, you have the ability to make a good decision. And we'll talk to you next week. This is Life, Death, and the Law, 560 AM KBLU.
know more about something that was discussed today, please call the law firm of Deason, Garner & Hanson at 928-783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
The preceding show on 560 KBLU was a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, El Dorado Broadcasters LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU, El Dorado Broadcasters LLC, nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
From the 1 Hour Air Conditioning and Heating Studio, this is News Talk 560 KBLU, Yuma.